This happened when I was in my early 20s. I was living in a studio apartment with my then boyfriend. On this particular night, I was pretty drained from work and decided to go to bed early. I slept on the right side of the bed, where we had the mattress against the wall, and I had fallen asleep facing the wall. I remember hearing voices. It sounded like they were behind me, almost like having a conversation. But I couldn't make out what they were saying. It was just below what I could understand. I remember rolling over and asking my boyfriend, "Did you say something?" He told me no and just looked at me puzzled as he was just quietly sitting on the couch scrolling through his phone. I said something along the lines of, "Oh, I thought I heard something," and just rolled back over, milling what I thought I'd heard. Then I had this immediate wave of what felt like my body was dropping, and there was dread in the air. I had this staticky feeling wash over me. It was like ozone smell, but I could feel it vibrating on my skin and through my body. Then I heard it again, what seemed like a group of men having a muffled conversation. But this time I was paralyzed, and I could sense their ominous presence behind me. It felt like they were talking about me, studying me. I was desperately trying to snap out of whatever force was pinning me in place. I managed to shift my gaze to see where the voices were coming from. There were three of them, standing in a cluster in the corner. Towering, featureless all-black masses, they were wearing what seemed to be long trench coats and wide-brimmed hats. The center figure was about a head height taller than the other two. I had the overwhelming sense that the one in the center was training them. At this point, my heart was pounding, and I felt like I was sinking. Further and further into the bed, the pressure, the panic, I felt like I was suffocating. I tried screaming, but nothing came out. I eventually shot upright, seemingly throwing myself out of this force. I gasped loudly, startling my boyfriend who came to comfort me. I was hysterical. I didn't know what I'd just witnessed, and it had felt so real. I was truly terrified. This was definitely more than just a nightmare. After several hours of talking and unwinding, I started to drift back to sleep, my boyfriend laying beside me, reassuring me that no one was in the room. The buzzing started, followed by the muffled conversation. This time I was facing the corner and they were still there, watching. As soon as I was able to jolt myself out of their paralyzing hold, I stayed up the rest of the night, and I struggled to sleep for weeks following this incident. I've never had anything like that happen ever again. But I know something was in the room that night. Anytime I start to feel that dread as I'm falling asleep, I immediately get up and keep my mind occupied, avoiding looking at the dark corners. It's been roughly 15 years now, and I still think about it most nights, mostly as a passing thought. I try not to, but I can't help but scan the corners of the room as I begin to drift, listening, wondering if they're still watching.
Back in the 2000s, I got an intern job working with the local radio station just outside Chicago. I had just started at the Illinois Media School and was basically following my brother into the industry. He'd already been working at WKCV for like 7 years at that point, and he helped me get my foot in the door, which I was thankful for at the time. I always thought he had the coolest job. Everyone knew WKCV, which made me known as the brother to Clark, who was the glorified sidekick to the show host Monty of Raging Monty in the Morning. He'd worked all the way from the bottom, and eventually to co-host after a few years. It was the typical kind of crude bro banter for the time, you know, with the emphasizing sound effects to really deliver the zings. They'd give highlights of the news in a funny way, and spend the main part of the show taking calls from people asking for advice about ridiculous stuff, which was mostly scripted, where they would have whatever radio personality on as their experts. I spent the first 6 to 7 months kind of shadowing and doing BS work, like picking up lunch or going on coffee runs for everyone. My brother kept telling me to bide my time, but it was getting pretty frustrating being the kid and not really doing much besides basically being an unpaid assistant. After crashing on their couch for most of the summer and having a couple roommates bounce, my brother and Monty let me move in with them in their condo that overlooked Lake Michigan. It was wild most of the week, with late nights downtown spilling over into the condo, and with early mornings come Monday. I was fortunate enough to be with the guys that had connections everywhere across the city, be it exclusive events or drinks on the house, it was a whirlwind time in my life. Thanksgiving came around, and my brother announced that he was finally moving in with his longtime girlfriend. It was pretty obvious that she didn't really care for Monty, especially seeing how vocal he was about being the forever bachelor. She was tired of my brother being forced to wingman every time Monty wanted to go out, and started coming out less and less with us leading up to this. I was young and tried to talk him out of making that kind of big commitment just yet, and so did Monty. This caused a bit of a rift between them. There was noticeable tension between Clark and Monty, but they still remained as co-hosts on the show for the time being. Monty had quite the following of diehard fans, and we'd get a huge crowd anytime he did a live setup at promotional events or clubs. And in a way, I filled the co-host role during those outings we had. And on occasion, he'd offhandedly tell me about how he saw me eventually replacing Clark on the show, which, I'm not gonna lie, I was pumped about it. I just didn't understand at the time why Clark was throwing his life, this life, away. I really looked up to Monty. I mean, all he wanted to do was live it up, and I didn't blame him, until he met Mandy. WKCV decided to run some crazy contest as a wind-up to New Year's. You know, spend the night co-hosting the ball drop, and start your new year with a kiss from Monty if you're the lucky girl. We were bombarded with calls from chicks all over Chicago, and a few out-of-staters, trying their best to convince Monty why he should pick them. He reveled in the attention, women practically throwing themselves at him. He was a homegrown celebrity after all. He did his usual bit of asking them broad personal questions, you know. Are you blonde? Redhead? Critiquing their voice, asking them if they had any interesting talents. The usual morning chat show banter. A couple days in, and we got this lady on the line. They had me pre-screening, and they wanted me to squeeze in a few kooky ones. I mean, I feel bad about it. But at the time, it was just for show, you know, comic relief. Man, this lady, Mandy, she came off trying way too hard, and frankly, just weird. He kinda egged her on, steering the conversation to get her to say the strangest things. There was clearly something off with the girl, but the show continued. Anytime someone said the wrong thing on air, they ran with it. The real cherry on top was when she shared her interesting talent. She claimed that her and her sister were telepathic. Everyone erupted in laughter, and Monty made some snide remark about her being the woman of his dreams. Once she was off the air, there were more jokes made at her expense. It was expected, and I didn't think much more of it. Later on, we set up a booth at a dealership right off of I-90 during the week, and have in-person interviews on air. We were getting our gear ready early one morning, and I heard a woman behind me. I recognized her voice, her bordering manic tone. I tried my best to politely tell her to come back around 10, but she kept rambling about, when was she going to hear back about the New Year's event? There was something about her chaotic nature, the crazy in her eyes, made it hard for me to even look at her. I just wanted to get away. Handwritten letters began arriving at the station, which were secretly read by the station staff. New jokes were made. These were desperate ramblings, trying to convince us that Mandy needed to be chosen for the New Year's event. And they were signed, sincerely, the woman of your dreams, or what we figured was her sister signed, Brandy. I wasn't finding this funny anymore, and no one was taking the situation seriously. I considered moving back in with my parents, but it'd make work awkward, and I didn't have much money set aside to even think about quitting. The Mandy and Brandy psycho sisters became an on-air joke, and they really pushed that narrative with updates on the ongoing one-sided exchanges, with random callers voicing their concerns. One of the regular radio personalities would call in as Sandy, a funny, husky-voiced man trying to sound like a woman, swearing his love to Monty followed with a maniacal laugh. It became a daily thing for a week or so. Then we got a call shortly after, about a week out from the event. A woman called in. Her voice was solemn, bordering menacing. She made it clear that she didn't want to be on the air. She wanted to talk to me. Jake, right? I still remember my stomach dropping. The other guy living at 722 Cedar Way, South State Street. Her voice made my skin crawl. I just felt that she knew more about me than I wanted to know. My mind was spinning. The last I remember was her telling me that, Mandy better get that New Year's kiss. Of course, Monty didn't take it seriously. No one did. It didn't matter if she knew our exact address. He told me to chill out, and relayed the same numerous stories of crazy exes, and to learn from him kind of thing. They're all talk, is what he said. The calls continued. I was beginning to wonder if this was an elaborate bit. Were they pranking me? I just thought my brother was in on it somehow. They knew I was starting to feel uneasy. I had started to see a strange woman around town during my daily jogs. Didn't matter what time of day. A slender young woman with white blonde hair, in a long dress and sandals. She would be standing at the intersection closest to our condo, and then I'd spot her around the corner of North Street as I circled back. I started seeing her everywhere I went. That same woman. But I figured, I don't know, maybe she just had one of those looks, and that I mistook her for the same lady. I was tired, and just tried to let it go. This was around the time that I started to disconnect from everything. Time was a blur. I felt like I couldn't turn to anyone. I started having reoccurring nightmares of a woman at my window, tapping, whispering gibberish. Her face, covered in shadows, her outline illuminated by a nearby streetlight. I began sleeping with the lights and TV on at night, followed with a decent dose of melatonin. The New Year's event was a few weeks away, WKCV's biggest event ever, and also secretly my brother's proposal. Things were overwhelming with everything going on. It seemed like I was the only person really on edge. It just felt like something was building up. The nightmares continued. This time, the woman had a face. That blonde woman, peering in at night, her skeletal fingers tapping against the glass. Her face dark, moonlight highlighting her profile. Eventually, I was convinced that even the lights and TV on couldn't keep her out. I triple-checked the windows and doors at night, the sliding glass door to the balcony causing the deepest sense of dread. I made sure I kept the door reinforced with a plank of wood wedged in the door grooves. I prayed that Monty didn't forget each time he went outside for a smoke. And yet there she was, that blonde woman here and there around town. It was driving me insane. I even asked the station security if they'd seen the woman. All they said was with the grainy CCTV footage. They couldn't get a good read on everyone that passed by. They reassured me with a side eye that they'd let me know if they saw her. Everyone began looking at me as if I was crazy. And honestly, had I not been roommates with Monty and brother to Clark, I doubt I would have still had my job. At one point, Monty tried to reason with me, telling me that there wasn't anything to confirm that the incidents were even related. After all, we lived and worked on a busy street in the business district. Things finally came to a head when Monty was approached as he left from work, that Friday before New Year's. She had grabbed his arm in her attempt to get his attention through rambling yelling. Security was quick to call the cops, who happened to be on patrol nearby. They said she had serious charges from previous incidents. Terroristic threats, breaking and entering. We breathed a sigh of relief that she'd been booked for the time being. We thought that was the end of it, and we continued with the New Year's event. It was hectic with the planning, and I was overwhelmed with everything going on. Things were going as planned the day of. I was overseeing the sound up in the bird's nest, and the venue was packed. Countdown to midnight, we had unexpected power surges, the lights would flicker, and Monty did his usual jokes to the crowd from the stage, while the sound crew scurried around in the back, checking equipment. I was mainly focused on my brother and his proposal. The last thing I wanted to do was blow it. The plan was to deliver the message 2 minutes to midnight. I had a whole set planned, and Monty knew the drill. After the last power surge, the backup generators kicked on, which eased the crowd. I scanned the arena, gauging their response, when I noticed her. People started to gather on the stage as the time ticked closer to midnight, loose confetti falling from the ceiling. That insane woman was on the stage. The giant jumbotron overhead zoomed in on their smiling faces, and there was Mandy. I tried to get the security's attention, which caused them to swarm the stage during the ball drop. A blur of falling balloons and confetti muffling her kicking and screaming as they dragged her off the stage. The cops escorted her out, eventually charging her. The thing is, Mandy's twin was already in jail, having taken her spot originally. With that, they tacked on a false impersonation charge to Brandy for her role in the confrontation with Monty. That was the terrifying reality of the Mandy and Brandy twins and their joint track record. Believe it or not, I still get mail from what I think is them from time to time, even after I moved. They've recently been released on parole, and I'm afraid what's next for them. Will they remember me? Will they come after me next?